There are 25,000 licensed trappers in the state of Alaska. On this Chinook program, we'll hear from a trapper who makes a substantial part of his living trapping, learn what a fur buyer looks for, and get a perspective on the industry from a biologist who specializes in fur bearers. Herb Melchior is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's fur bearer biologist.
I suspect we have, you know, in the range of 5 to 10,000 active trappers out of the 25. But that's a guess. It's hard to know exactly how many are out there, you know, in any one year. And the number varies depending on the prices. Because if prices go low enough, it's just not worthwhile, you know, economically for people to go out. And some will do it anyway because they enjoy, you know, the whole activity. And others will just drop out of it for that year or those years when the prices are low.
Herb estimates that trappers collectively bring in between $6 and $10 million a year for raw pelts, the untanned skins of lynx, muskrat, marten, fox, wolverine, wolf, mink, marten, otter, coyote, and ground squirrel. In terms of the world market or the world activity level for trapping, where does Alaska fare?
Numerically, given that we're harvesting on roughly 200,000 pelts a year, in the last several years anyway, that doesn't compare very well with some of the lower 48 states, for example, who turn out, you know, huge numbers of pelts. For a number of years now, we've been putting together tables of the harvest, estimated harvest coming from all the different states. And I guess we could take a look at there's a new book coming out, but the most recent one I have at hand is 1977-78. And so you can look down one side of this chart at the states, and across the top are listed the species that are in the general fur trade. And you can compare Alaska then, which is the second one on the list following Alabama, with other states. In some species, Alaska takes more than any other. And that's true for things like lynx and marten and wolverine and wolves. That is, Alaska takes harvest more of those than any of the other, you know, the 50 states. If you include Canadian provinces, then we drop out of that number one slot for a few things. But even there, we still are the highest as far as wolverine is concerned. And marten is number two. So marten is really an important species to Alaska. Wolves, marten, lynx. We're also quite high in terms of Arctic fox. Those are, you know, real northern species.
Fox, mink, and marten are the most economically important furs, according to the Department of Fish and Game. But there are other prized Alaskan furs as well. They come primarily from two areas of the state.
One of the most productive areas in the state is the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and the interior in general. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta produces large numbers of beaver, muskrat, otter, mink, and fox, red fox. The mink from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta are known throughout the international fur industry as some of the best in the world. I mean, it's a real highlight to get hold of Yukon-Kuskokwim mink. And often at auctions, you'll note that that mink from that section are singled out or batched separately. And in fact, back in the 30s, fur ranchers, mink ranchers from the state of Washington requested permission to take some live mink from that area to breed into their line of mink in Washington. And those mink from those ranches will show up on the Seattle Fur Exchange, for example, and be singled out as ranch-type Yukon-Kuskokwim mink. That shows you, you know, how much people think. In the interior here, marten is the big species, although we also catch fair numbers of, you know, red fox and lynx when the cycle is high.
The lynx population's been on the rise now, and I think this is the year it peaks now. Peak in this year.
Richard Carroll Jr. traps up the porcupine 180 river miles from his home in Fort Yukon.
4 years ago, when I've caught zero link, and it's been steady every year we've caught, well, this year my brother's caught up to 30-some link. Last year I trapped in the springtime up there and caught 26. The year before that I caught 23. The year before that 18 and zero. Just climbed just like that. And then the martingale went straight down too. Got 6 martin, I think, last winter. Last spring, I should say, I just trapped after January. Same thing I'm doing this year too. Because there's only link there, you know, and there ain't no sense in trapping link that'll be worth $300 a spring. No use trapping them in November when you only get $50 for them, you know. It's just still going to be there, I think. Ain't going to go nowhere. Plenty of feed there for them.
What kind of traps do you set?
Well, I set a lot of, not very big traps. I set a lot of fours. I mean lots, I mean a couple dozen, and which ain't very much compared to some people. They set hundreds of them. I don't set that many traps. Most traps I ever set one winter was about 25 dozen, I think. And I made a real good catch that year because I was the only one trapping in that whole country up there. I had about 100 miles of trap line. And there was only one there, and first guy was there for a long time too, maybe 4 or 5 years. And so the country was sort of built back up, you know. And I made a real good catch that winter. Never did any better since.
How many years do you think you've been trapping?
Well, 8 seasons. Yes, 8 seasons. This is the second winter we stayed here in town, second fall. At least, yeah, since we got married and since I started trapping. I usually go out in the fall time and come back, for the holidays, stay for a couple of weeks and go back out again and come back in the springtime for the dog race, watch the races, and then I've only sprung out a couple of times, though. The muskrats ain't worth it, and seems to be more fun in town.
About how much do you figure you can make in a trapping season?
Well, depends on how hard you want to work. The most I've cleared before was $10,000, and the least I've made was, well, I lost $2,500 one winter. Yeah, I went backwards. I gambled that 1 year. I trapped. The link were real high that year, and there were no link up where I was at. I think we caught 90 martin around Christmas time, and we should have did better than that. It was really poor for martin, and we had to go a long ways for them. So, everybody's catching a lot of link in the Black River country. So, I decided, why don't I spend all this money here and go over there, and it looked like we cleaned out the martin population too. We're just getting down to nothing, you know. And so we moved out of there, and we flew up to Salmon Fork of the Black River and stayed there. Well, we stayed there. I took a friend with me. Him and I went out as full partners, and I paid for everything, and that's how I lost my money.
How'd you get started trapping those 8 years ago?
Oh, well, I was in high school. I had another year to go, and I could have graduated that year if I wanted to and had enough credits, but I kind of holding back on a decision, you know. Maybe. Then I got a job. I got a 2-week job here in town. Filled in for a guy who went on vacation. I think I worked 3 weeks altogether and made about $500, you know, and saved it. And now I had all this money, and what am I going to do with it, you know? And I thought, why don't I go trapping, you know? There was a few people trapping, but it ain't like it is now, it seems like. More people are going at it full time now. They were just fooling around before.
3 medium ones and the 1 large one in the Martin.
Barry Morris is the manager and fur buyer for the Alaska Commercial Company store in Fort Yukon. In his office off the main floor, he looks at the fur's woody salmon brought in from Chalkeetsik.
A little less value probably than the darker ones. And then we've got 1 mink. There, and let's see, referring to the old Hudson Bay price list. 22 on that one. Adding them up here, we'll see what we come up with. Okay, let's say 130 even. That would be 32 on the Big Martin, 28, 26, and 22, and 22 on the Mink.
That sounds okay.
Okay. Somebody comes in here and says, hey, I got some furs for sale. What next?
Well, we'll take a look at them, obviously. We are given either weekly or fairly frequently updated price sheets. We'll refer to those. We'll look at them under the best lighting conditions that we can find in the office. And just sort more or less analyze them as to the depth of the fur, the quality of the fur, if there's any rubbed spots, if it's a fresh fur, if it was taken last year, just recently, that sort of thing.
How do you know?
It's a very black art that I'm still learning. I think you could probably do this your entire life and still not know all the tricks. It's you do actually, though, begin to be able to discern finer and finer differences, I've noticed, the longer I've done it.
Could we look at a Martin and discuss its quality?
Sure. This Martin here, for instance, is a fairly old one. In Martin, it's really apparent by how flexible they are, the age. And this one, as you may be able to hear, is fairly crinkly, and sometimes the term is used a paper Martin because it sounds like ruffling paper. This particular one here also is a bit lighter than is popular on the world market. Generally in Martin, the darker the fur, the better as far as the world market's concerned. This one here is about a medium-sized one. And off the top of my head, I would say we would be buying it from the trapper here for about $26, perhaps, something like that. This is a red fox we're looking at here. And like all the animals, they get better as the season progresses, with the best furs coming probably in January, early February, something like that. This is a fairly good one here. It's a little thin along the sides, where it's lacking what are referred to as guard hairs. The guard hairs are what really give it the color and the beauty, pretty much. There are some spots on this fur where the guard hairs are lacking a little, and you can see the under fur there. It's rather unsightly and makes the fur of less value than it would be if it was an ideal fur. Also, this one hasn't been particularly well prepared by the trapper before bringing it in. A real professional job might be to comb it out a bit more and to just improve the just aesthetic appearance of it, rather than having the damaged legs not combed out and that sort of thing.
The furs, with the exception of beaver, are all case-skinned. Rather than slit the animal up the belly, it's opened from the rear and the carcass removed. The whole skin is then stretched inside out on stretcher bars or wooden frames, dried and turned right side out again for selling either to a buyer like Barry Morris, to an itinerant buyer from one of the big houses like H.E. Goldberg in Seattle, or an independent fur trader. Or if the trapper has a large catch, they may prefer to send the skins on directly to an auction house, probably in Canada. Prices fluctuate during the season, largely due to the demands of the fashion industry. And then, for any given transaction, as Barry Morris says, there's the human factor.
The prices really depend on so many things, including the mood of the buyer and the seller at the time. Varies a lot.
Do you think that the amount that you get for trapping is worth all the effort and the time?
Not the time, but you know, we get a little money, and it's something that you're not under pressure. You know, it's not like a job. It's just you like doing it, and you do it.
I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.